You're listening to the Online DJ Podcast, where today we're talking about contracts and contractual law. So ladies and gents, welcome to another episode of the Online DJ Podcast. Now today, we're going to be talking about contracts and contractual law because it's one of those things in our business which we should really be having. We should have an agreement between ourselves, the DJ, and the client just to make sure everything is sort of verified, the client knows what we're doing, we know what we're meant to be doing, and it's all on paper, it's all in agreement, it's all signed for, so we're protected and the client's protected. But we often see a lot of questions come up, so what sort of things should we put in the contract? Can we electronically sign them? Are there clauses that I should have in my contract? All sorts of questions like this. So with me today, I've got Rob Schenk to help answer some questions on contracts and contractual law. So Rob, welcome to the Online DJ Podcast. I'm joined today by you because you're a wedding business lawyer from weddingindustrylaw.com. And you provide information to people about contracts and contract terminology and all sorts of aspects in the event industry. I want to make all our listeners aware before we get started that the content of this podcast is provided just for general information purposes and is not intended as legal advice. And if anyone needs legal advice, please head over and find a lawyer in your area to help you out. So firstly, Rob, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thank you very much for having me.
So start by telling us a little bit about you and your background, what you do.
I am I'm Rob Schenk. I am an attorney. I am based out of the United States in Atlanta, Georgia. I represent wedding business professionals in all types of matters. I call it being a wedding lawyer. So I represent DJs, planners, photographers, venue operators in their contractual matters, that is to say their, you know, contracts, things like that, reviewing contracts, as well as in disputes, so in litigation as well.
Okay, so in terms of contracts, with a DJ, why do you feel it's sort of important for a DJ to have a contract in the first place?
Well, having a contract from a basic standpoint is important because two people's memories are never going to be as good as a written piece of paper. So at least from that standpoint, having a contract is going to solidify basic terms, price, date, what time you got to be there, all that kind of stuff, which, you know, if you're relying on people's memories, I can't even remember what I had for breakfast yesterday. So that's important in terms of having a contract. The other part is being able to enforce the obligations and the promises that are contained on the piece of paper. Generally, when there's a written contract, that's much easier to do later on. 6 months later, you've got that piece of paper you could take in front of the judge or the magistrate or whatever the case may be and say, this person did or did not do this, and here is my proof that they didn't do it.
And a lot of people seem to kind of think it's cheaper to do the do-it-yourself thing. Is contracts one of those things? Should they like try and draft their own contract?
Well, I mean, I would say to you, is having an iPod the same as having a DJ? You know, I mean, it's going to be one of those options that a client, I'm sure you can if you want to. Is it optimal? No. Now, in terms of purchasing a contract off the internet or hiring an attorney, my deal is that I recommend purchasing a template that was drafted by an attorney at minimum. Or what's even better is having an attorney in your area draft a contract that meets not just the industry's needs of being a DJ, but the needs that you specifically may have as opposed to the next DJ. Those are going to be your two best options. Like I said, can you get something off the internet or from your buddy? Yeah. But you're going to probably run into some trouble with it.
So you said about like contracts, we usually need to clarify things with our clients, like event dates, venue, things like that. But what sort of other terms can we ask for? Can we ask for like a certain amount of electricity outlets or terms like that?
Well, this, I always like to say that when you're talking about contracts, I mean, unless the contract is for committing a crime, selling drugs, you know, that kind of thing, two adults, particularly in the United States, can contract to do whatever they want to do. So to answer the question specifically, yes, a DJ can ask for specific electrical outlets or power. You know, you need to have this in order for the lights to work. That kind of thing is absolutely doable in a contract and recommended if you have special things that you need. So, for example, I need, if it's an outside event, you need to provide to me a 6x6 tent to protect me from the elements. Or if it's an inside event and you've got lights, you need to have, you know, a 220-volt, you know, outlet for me. It's got to be within 10 feet of the setup area. All that stuff is absolutely something that you can ask for if you need it.
So let me do a bit of a scenario. Say I'm DJing an event and the venue manager walks over to me and says, you have to finish an hour earlier than you were going to because our music license is going to run out. The client wasn't aware of this, and I wasn't aware of this. Is there a way to sort of protect ourselves from getting a breach of contract case come up against us?
Yes. So to protect against a scenario like that, it's a very good question. To protect against a scenario like that, I recommend in a DJ contract to have what's called a venue policies clause. And so a venue's policy clause is going to function like this. It's going to say, I, the DJ, am going to be inhibited by the policies and guidelines of the venue. So to the extent that my contract with you is hindered by whatever the venue says, I'm going to have to be bound by the venue because I don't want to go to jail or get beat up by the venue owner for playing, you know, too late or whatever. So it puts the onus on the client to make any arrangements that need to be made so that you can do your job at the event. So that's very important to have for DJs. In fact, DJs are the one industry that I say it's almost critical that you have that, and it's exactly for the reasons of licenses, sound ordinances, that kind of thing.
Okay, so say everything did sort of go south and the client got really sort of angry and out of spite, they tried to bring up sort of emotional distress and all that against the DJ. Is there any way they could sort of protect themselves from getting sued from way more money than they made from a contract?
Yes. So generally in the law, the causes of action for breach of contract are separate and apart from causes of action for torts. A tort is going to be a civil wrong, not a criminal wrong, but a civil wrong that's not a breach of contract. So defamation, intentional infliction of emotional distress, things like that. And the difference between those two causes of action, that being breach of contract and torts, is that the potential damages can be greater. Generally, in a breach of contract action, what the person bringing the lawsuit will be able to get are expectation damages. That is to say, damages that would put the party in a position they would have been in had the contract gone through. So that generally for the vendor or for the client means contract value minus expenses. So you as the vendor, if you have to sue the client for money, then you're going to ask for, if the contract's $1,000, you would have paid $100 in gas or whatever to get out there. Your expectation damages are $900 and vice versa. So if the client wants to sue the DJ, for breach of contract because they didn't do a good job, let's say that you left an hour early, then you would itemize that. How much is that hour worth versus the entire contract value? That's breach of contract. So in other words, reasonable, I don't want to say reasonable, but it's foreseeable damages. With tort damages, the term pain and suffering comes into play. General damages is what we call it, where they can say, I suffered because of that. Generally in the law, those two areas don't mix, okay? If somebody's suing you because you messed up at the event, they're generally not going to be able to tack on intentional infliction of emotional distress and tag you for much higher damages. However, at least in the United States, in some instances, that's being eroded depending on how egregious the vendor's actions are. So to stop that, you can incorporate as the DJ what's called a limited liability provision, which would say something along the lines of, this is just an arm's length transaction. And in the event that you sue me for whatever reason, whether it's contract or torts, they're going to be limited in damages to the amount that you paid for the contract, or limited to whatever amount that you decide. And that's how you can get around that kind of stuff. But just as a disclaimer, generally those are not going to prevent you from getting from being able to intentionally hurt somebody. Like, so in other words, the limited liability clause is not going to prevent damages in the case you go up and punch somebody out.
Okay. So let me give you a much easier question this time. If we want to sort of take photographs of our guests and all that sort of thing at an event, do we have to sort of get permission from our clients to do this, or can we just state that this is what we're going to be doing?
Okay, so this was a big brouhaha in the States last year with a DJ coming to an event with professional photography. If you want to take photographs of an event, then you need to get permission and authorization from the clients to do that. That's number one. Number two in the contract is you want to get a release from the clients that once you take these images, that you'll be able to use the images, because people have, in the States at least, the right to their likeness. So if you want to use, you know, client A, client B's faces in these images, they got to give you permission to do that. So you got to get authorization to take the pictures, you got to get authorization to use them, and you got to let them know how you're going to use it, whether it's in marketing, whatever. You're not going to just sell the images to Hallmark and they're going to see themselves on TV the next day or something like that. That's the first thing. The second thing is you want to make sure to, in order to not worry about that, you know, wedding photo gate issues, you need to make sure the client agrees that you're, by you doing that, it's not going to interfere with the rights of the principal photographer.
Okay, so with sort of another thing I see come up a lot in the DJ industry, a lot of us are moving towards sort of online planning and having to do a lot less sort of mailing of stuff physically, like posting a letter. So when it comes to like contracts, can you sign them electronically now? And is that sort of legally binding?
At least in the States, it is. In most states, you can, an e-signature is going to be enforceable. And there are several companies that offer that that are reputable. I think DocuSign is one of them. I do that in my legal practice. You can send stuff and sign stuff through electronic signature. And that's, I mean, it's getting more and more common. I actually have not had to, at this point, in a courtroom, verify a signature through an electronic signature. I mean, I've done it several times with an actual handwritten signature. So I haven't seen it played out in court, but I mean, I know that it has. I just haven't done it personally, and it is enforceable, yes.
So other than signatures, I usually sort of take a deposit when I do a booking. And up until recently, I've sort of waited until I got to the event and got the outstanding balance. Is that a good idea, or is it a better idea to kind of get full payment before I go to the event?
I recommend to almost all of my vendors, there are going to be some industries that are an exception, like photography, because yeah, they have a product to hang over the head after the event. But I suggest to most of my clients that they are 100% paid prior to getting out of the car and walking over to the event. So, how you take that is going to be different for everybody. I recommend incremental, maybe 2-3 payments, maybe 4 payments, just depending. But definitely you want to have that all paid up prior, because under the understanding that generally when you go to the event, if they don't have the money, you're probably not going to leave. You're going to do the event, and that leaves you in the position of having to chase money down. Because I mean, unless only the most, only the most hardcore people are going to say, you don't have my money, I'm out of here.
So if people want to find out more about all sort of contractual law and event law, things like that, and find out more about you, where can they do that?
People can, if they want to read more, as much as they want to read about the wedding industry and event industry law, they can go to my website, which is weddingindustrylaw.com. That's weddingindustrylaw.com. And there's hundreds of blog articles over the topics that we just talked about. In terms of looking up contracts and things like that, they're more than welcome to go to a website that I run called Wed Forms. That's WEDFORMZ.com, Wed Forms with a Z.com. And there are contract templates available that I've drafted basically based on my experience as a wedding lawyer over the past few years, they're basic contract templates that I encourage DJs to get and then make the changes and take in front of another attorney in their area to make sure that it's good or hit the ground running with it.
So on an unrelated topic, we usually ask people that come on the podcast what their favorite song is. It's a hard question, but what's yours?
I am a former musician, so I have 1,000 favorite songs. But I will say this, that there's a famous theater in Atlanta called the Fox Theater. And in tribute to Prince, this past Saturday, they played Purple Rain at the theater. And my favorite song in Purple Rain is The Beautiful Ones. So that's how I'll answer that one, in a tribute to Prince.
Okay, well, that's all our questions, Rob, so thanks.
You're very welcome. Thank you for having me.
So that was Rob Schenck, an attorney who also runs WeddingIndustryLaw.com, and he provided a lot of useful information about contracts and contractual law, what terms you should put in your contract, what terms are a good idea to have in your contract, how you should approach some things like photography, e-signatures, payments, all sorts of aspects like that. If you want to find out any more information about those topics, head over to the website www.WeddingIndustryLaw.com. And he has loads of sections on the website speaking about all sorts of subjects like those. Also, if you want to find out more information about those laws in the UK, we will try and put some of those information in our show notes. So you can go check it out as well and see how it relates to over here. But Rob was a great help and he provided a lot of great useful information on contracts. If you want to discuss anything about what we talked about on the show today, you can do so on our Twitter at OnlineDJHQ. You can also head over to our Facebook, Online DJ. Or if you want to read all our articles, reviews, and stuff like that, you can head over to our website, www.onlinedj.co. We also have all the ways you can subscribe to our podcast over there on the website. So you can subscribe to us on iTunes, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, and other platforms like that. Also, if you're enjoying what we do, please head over to iTunes or one of those platforms I just mentioned and leave us a review. We really appreciate it and it really helps us to keep motivated and keep going with this podcast. So other than that, that's all we've got time for today. So see ya.